Constant Wonder Kids is a Constant Wonder podcast.
Hi, Wonder Kids. It's Paige. Do you have a dog at your house? Lots of families do. My mother-in-law and father-in-law have a dog named Milo, and Milo is equal parts adorable and ridiculous. He loves cuddles, keeps watch out the window like a security guard, and if someone leaves the door open for even 2 seconds, he tries to escape. Now, when Milo first came home, my father-in-law was not excited about becoming friends with a dog. But over time, Milo slowly worked his magic. When Milo zooms around the house in crazy circles, my father-in-law laughs. When Milo cuddles up with the family, my father-in-law thinks he's sweet. And recently, when Milo escaped out the front door, my father-in-law called for him to come back, and Milo actually listened. My father-in-law was so proud, he immediately sent a picture of Milo to the family group chat. Seeing someone go from, "I don't need a dog," to, "Look how cute my dog is very funny to me. But if I told this story to today's guest, he wouldn't be surprised at all. According to him, dogs are experts at winning over humans. And that's one reason they've become such a successful species.
There are 1 billion with a B dogs on the surface of this planet. They are on every continent. They are so numerous and so many of them. They are objectively a very successful species. And you ask yourself, well, how did they pull this off? How did this little animal, it's not a lion, it's not a bear, it's a relatively modest little beast. How did it achieve this? And at the end of the day, the answer is it's because of their amazing ability, willingness, drive to form strong emotional bonds with members of other species, and in particular with us. And it's because they care about us and they convince us to care, to reciprocate that, to care about them in return.
This is Clive Wynn. He's a behavioral scientist and an expert on dog behavior. Like he said, there are 1 billion dogs all over the planet, which from a species point of view means that dogs have been very successful in living and passing on their genes. Clive is interested in what has made dogs so successful, and to him, the answer is in their ability to love humans. Now, as a scientist, you have to be objective when observing your subjects. So initially, Clive was a little hesitant to use the word love to describe what was going on between dogs and humans.
We're not encouraged to use four-letter words like love, right? I mean, this is not a very scientific concept, but I noticed how researchers were using these long phrases. We were coming up with these long technical sounding phrases, like one of them is exaggerated gregariousness. I found myself wondering, well, what do we really mean? How do I explain exaggerated gregariousness or hypersociability? What are these? If I'm translating from science language to ordinary English, what are these technical sounding terms? What are they in ordinary English? And at the end of the day, these are just very fancy ways of saying love, you know? I'm British, we're not perhaps the most emotionally expressive people at the best of times, and so I was kind of a little holding back, reluctant to go with this, and my training, I trained as a behaviorist, also a fairly hard sort of scientist within the study of behavior, and so I was reluctant to give in to this, but ultimately I had to recognize this really is it. It really is dogs' capacity, desire, drive, their exceptional gregariousness, their drive to love, that is the secret of their success.
So what gives dogs this special ability to love humans so much? The secret lies in their long imprinting window.
No animal is born knowing what species it belongs to. No human, no dog, no chicken, nothing is born knowing what group of beings it belongs to. All of us, very, very early in life, had to look around us to figure out what kind of beings am I surrounded by? And whatever kinds of beings you were surrounded by in your first, I don't know how long it is in humans, but let's say it's months, your first months of life, those are the beings that you seek out through the rest of your life to form your emotional attachments. And this was called imprinting, and it was discovered by the Austrian Konrad Lorenz in the 1930s. And there are these famous black and white photos and silent movies of him being followed around by goslings and ducklings, because he arranged things so that when they hatched, the first thing they saw wasn't another goose or another duck, it was him. And so they want to bond with him. So that's true of all animals, all time. But our dogs, and this has been known since the 1960s, our dogs, instead of only having a couple of weeks at the very beginning of life to learn that lesson, who am I and what kinds of beings should I form relationships with through the rest of my life, our dogs have at least 3 months of life. And that is such an extended window of opportunity that our dogs, they go through life seeking to form emotional bonds with beings that belong to the species they met in the first 3 months of life.
So this is the key to the dog love superpower. They have more time to develop relationships with other species, specifically us humans. That's true for pet dogs, street dogs, and even working dogs.
When we're thinking about pet dogs that grow up in human families, well, of course, they see human beings during that period, and so they seek out human beings for the rest of their lives. That's true even of street dogs in the many parts of the third world where the streets and the villages are full of dogs just running around. They don't belong to anybody in particular, but those animals are still seeking human relationships because they interacted with people early in life. And ranchers exploit this. I went and visited some goat ranchers, and they have this beautiful ranch, and they have goats wandering all over the place, and they have dogs that follow the goats around and keep an eye open for coyotes, even ravens, even birds, crows that might threaten the goats. And the secret of why the dogs love goats, because they put the puppies with goats when they were small, and so the puppies grow up seeking goats for their emotional bonds. It's really an amazing thing.
So dogs love humans and other animal species because they were exposed to them early in their lives. Cool! Beyond just knowing that dogs love humans, Clive has been interested in discovering what dogs are willing to do because they love humans. This has led to a couple of different experiments involving humans in distress.
We developed a study where we asked people to crawl inside a box. Very simple. The box can be very easily opened just by nudging the front of it. And we had the people inside the box cry out in distress. They're just crying out help. All the dog needs to do is to nudge the front of the box. And we also put a video camera in there so we can see what the dogs are doing. And the first thing is that the dogs, all of the dogs, are very, very upset. We can watch how their tail moves, how they behave, how they whine, how they cry. We could see that all of the dogs were very upset that their person was crying out from inside a box for help.
That's sweet that all of the dogs were sad about their humans being trapped in the box. However, just because they cared doesn't mean that the dogs were able to figure out how to rescue their humans.
1 in 3 of the dogs opened the box. So then the question is, why only 1 in 3? What's going on with the other 2 out of 3 dogs who do not open the box? All of the dogs look very upset. And we also did a control test. We let the dog watch while we drop a piece of food into the box through a hole in the top. And we know, because we carefully selected, we know the dogs want these treats that we're dropping into the box. So we know the dogs are motivated. But actually, even fewer dogs open the box to get the treat out than open it to get their people out. So in other words, the dogs do care that their people are in distress. They do want to help. They're just not smart enough, most of them, to understand how to open even this really, really easy box.
Even if not all dogs are smart enough to know how to open a box on their own, the desire to help is there, and that's why humans can train dogs to do all sorts of useful things. This makes me wonder how our early ancestors became friends with dogs in the first place. Sometimes we like to imagine that early humans befriended wolves, and then the two species learned to hunt together. While Clive thinks this is a nice story, in reality, he believes the relationship began a bit differently.
I work together with a group in Indiana, Wolf Park in Indiana. And there you will meet wolves who are as friendly towards people as any wolves you will ever meet. And they certainly do care about the people that they've known all their lives. But one thing you could never do, you could never share food with a wolf. I'm pretty convinced that if you were to take one of the wolves from Wolf Park, put it on a leash, and go out into the forest hunting with it, you could let that wolf go on the edge of the forest. The wolf would run off into the forest and it would find prey. Then what happens? The wolf would kill the prey, the wolf would eat the prey, and some hours or days later, the wolf would come back to you. You would still be hungry.
So even friendly wolves aren't interested in sharing food with humans. Dogs are different.
I have been hunting with native people in Nicaragua, and they take their dogs to the edge of the forest, let the dog off the leash, off the rope, and the dog runs off and finds some prey. When the dog finds prey, it calls for the people. That's the whole purpose of the dog. The dog identifies the prey and calls, barks, yells for the people to come and catch up. The people complete the kill and share the profit with the dog. So everybody wins.
If you have a dog at home, Clive says that the best thing we can do to love our dogs back is to spend time with them.
I believe that it's crucial to a dog's nature to want and need to be in relationships with people or with other animals. I tell people who come to me because they're interested in getting a dog, I tell them to think about whether their life actually has space for a dog. That's an important consideration. And then remember, just because you cannot get home, your dog will make friends with other people very easily. So you might take on services of a dog walker. You might have a neighbor who just wants to come around and have a coffee with your dog, or a doggy daycare. There are alternative ways of making sure your dog doesn't get unbearably lonely during the day while you're out.
Even if you can't spend the whole day with your dog, don't worry. Dogs are good at making friends and have room in their hearts to love lots of people. I think it's incredible that dogs have been able to use their loving superpower to connect themselves to humans for thousands of years. Just like Milo and my father-in-law, dogs are able to win us humans over with their love, and that has made them a super successful species. That's pretty wonderful to me.
A quick word here for you parents. I'm Marcus Smith, host of Constant Wonder, which is the source of material for Constant Wonder Kids. We made this episode because Constant Wonder contains a lot of great stuff that kids will love too, but you may be wanting more. Constant Wonder is on an ongoing quest to find awe and wonder in all nature, human or wild, vast or small. The kinds of encounters that move us beyond words. Remember when you had time for wonder? Well, we think you still do. Subscribe to Constant Wonder on your favorite platform. Constant Wonder Kids was produced by Paige Crumperman Darrington with sound design by Mitchell Towsley. Tenery Taylor is the executive producer. Constant Wonder Kids is a production of BYU Radio.